Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Ah! many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer at the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Bye.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They want to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
All right, time for another installment of It's My House, and today's podcast is titled Brazil 2020 with John Thompson, live stream number 619-768-2945. That's Brazil 2020 with Mr. John Thompson. Once again, live stream number is 619-768-2945. Now, some of you regular listeners might remember, I guess, a couple of years ago, and then we had to go back 2 years. Possibly 4 years. But definitely, three years ago. I used to produce a program titled The Charles Tyler Show. Okay, very, very popular show. Charles came on midweek. We started like it. First couple of shows was at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but there were so many calls, people couldn't get in. So then the third show, we opened it up. We started at 7 p.m., and then we initially planned for 30 minutes, but then that ended up being 2 hours, and that show went on for... 2.5, almost 3 years until Charles passed over. Well, anyway, for those of you who don't know, Charles Tyler was big on Brazil and international travel, as he called it, getting out of the matrix. Now, some of the more highly rated programs on the Charles Tyler Show, which is still online, we archived probably got about 100 shows with Charles archived on Blog Talk Radio, but then he's got his own videos on YouTube. But the highest rated programs that I produce with him were featuring Mr. John Thompson, and he did one interview with Umar Johnson as well. They had a lot of ratings, but Umar was just one show. He had Mr. John Thompson on, I don't know, 2-3 times at least. So we have Mr. John Thompson, who was Charles Tyler's mentor. Okay. And good morning, Mr. Thompson.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, fine. Now, you're in Rio de Janeiro. I know you're in Brazil right now, but Rio right now?
Rio de Janeiro. Sunny Rio de Janeiro. It's beautiful outside.
All right, great. Well, thanks for calling in this time of day because we have been bouncing around on this. Now, for people listening, now, we're doing this podcast today on a Monday to introduce. We're not going with, because Charles is no longer here, so we're not going to use the Charles Tyler Show anymore, but we're going to, it could be the John Thompson from Brazil show. But anyway, that'll be on Sundays, same phone number and all that. Sundays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but just for your local time zone globally. So, Mr. Thompson, well, let's start off with Charles. How did you meet him, and, you know, what type of relationship did you have with him, and that type thing?
Well, Charles, I met Charles via, you know, telephone call. He called me one day. He had, I guess, found out from others that I've been, you know, here in Rio for so long and been, you know, doing my parties and boat rides and all this entertainment events and everything here in Rio, and been working with the local black officials too and the governor and everything. So so that's what enticed him to call me, you know. And And I think I, since I've been here off and on for over 35 years, I probably had probably the most experience in traveling to Brazil. And that's how we met. And we started doing parties together. You know, he wanted to join me in the party. So, and we became friends. We were very close, you know. He was very close and loved him like a brother.
Right, yeah. He spoke very highly of you. Now, Charles, I guess at the beginning of his program, matter of fact, all through when he was doing these podcasts, he would, you know, give people that I'm sure a lot of people who had never even thought about going to Brazil made their first trip out of the country to Brazil because of Charles. He was always say, brothers, get your passport. So, and at that time, you needed a visa as well. So give us an update in 2020 for people who would like to travel internationally, particularly to Brazil. What are the basic requirements that are needed now in 2020?
Well, the basic requirement is just basic, a valid passport. And, you know, so that's the basic requirement right now. If you, for, I think, 30 to X amount of days, you know, since I'm a permanent resident, I don't even bother worrying about, you know, the time. But basically just a passport, and, you know, the federal government in the United States would do a background check on you and just make sure that, you know, that you're who you are and what have you. So those are really, we don't have those restrictions anymore. So it's easy to come to Brazil now, just a basic passport.
Okay, so you don't need a visa anymore?
No, you don't need a visa anymore. Just your passport is fine enough. You don't need a visa anymore to enter Brazil.
Okay, that's great, because back when we were doing the show with Charles, you know he would say, you know, passport and visa, but now they any particular reason why it's become easier now? You don't need that visa, just the passport.
Well, you know, at one point, the United States was one of the most travel group to Brazil, and Brazil have lost that you know, that income coming from the United States, and I think that would prompted them to you know, to disregard, you know, the visa anymore and to get more Americans visiting Brazil. Well, we were number one at one point. I think we maybe five or six now, with Argentina and some of the South American countries being number one. So economically, it was good for Brazil to make that change.
Okay, all right. Now, one of the things that Charles used to talk about, or a lot of his listening audience like to talk about in the early stages of the Charles Tyler podcast, was the women. So, your suggestions on what kind of a mindset should, because you got both men and women who go to Brazil all the time. But as far as any advice on reasons why a person would want to, I mean, I wouldn't suggest solely go to Brazil for women, but you don't want to get in trouble down there either. So any advice on how people can, men, particularly men, I don't know if they had the Me Too movement down there yet, but any suggestion on how, you know, us men, particularly the youngins, should conduct ourselves when traveling for Brazil and socializing?
Well, that's a very good question. I just had my birthday party yesterday at one of the locations here, and we had a great time. And one thing about the women here, they're beautiful. They're beautiful. They're very kind, warm-hearted. And the thing about it, one of the brothers called me the other day. Said, John, one thing that's unique, Brazil don't have this hang up on age when it comes to males and females. A man at 70, 80, 90 years old can date a young lady, whatever, over 18, and have no problems with it.
Okay, all right.
The society here accepts that.
Okay.
Different from the American.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, they got all kind of limitations here. Well, now, speaking of Me Too, you know, because that's in our United States culture these days, what's the climate down there with men and women as far as, I mean, is there a Me Too mindset down there, culturally speaking, right now?
Well, I would say sort of. I'll put it that way, sort of. If you look at last carnival, the summer school Mangueira had presented something that was very controversial to the president and certain religious group, is that there have been a lot of assault on women's, you know, the women's rights here and everything. So there's a sort of a Me Too movement, but not at the same as in the United States. So, you know, but the women's here are very, they're outspoken. When they don't like something, they let you know.
Right.
Okay, and there have been a lot of, like I said, there been a lot of assault against women, the male. And that is something that's being presented right now to the public here in Brazil. And that was presented in Mangueira Summer School when they perform.
Okay. All right. Now, also what's in the news here, I mean, well, not only in the United States, but it's a global thing. What's the current update on or news on coronavirus in Brazil?
Well, we have X amount of cases here in Brazil. Also, we don't have that many in Rio de Janeiro. We don't have a shutdown yet. So this is something that, but you know, the same way of protecting yourself is relevant here in Brazil as opposed to, you know, the America and the rest of the world. So it's haven't come to that point. I guess it's a wait and see and everything, but we're just doing what we need to do to protect ourselves.
Okay.
Large crowd, what have you.
All right. Now, for a person that wants to travel to Brazil, all right, you don't need the visa now. You need a valid passport. What would you suggest, like, ballpark figure? I know it depends on their other factors, but you know, what would a round-trip ticket cost? I mean, that's a ballpark figure because I know it depends on when you're going to come, what time of year, and, you know, first-class coach and all that. But what should a person hypothetically, realistically budget for a ticket and accommodations? And what accommodations options are available in let's just keep this conversation to Rio for the moment.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, a ballpark figure on airline tickets would be, I'd say, between 700 to, I would say, 700 to 1300.
Okay.
Depending on the direct flight or what have you, you make a lot of connections, what have you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And your accommodation should run about, I would say, 60 to 75, depending on the location, the apartment of view or no view, and the area in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
All right. Now, many people, like I said, when Charles was alive, you know, when I'm sure you met quite a few of them yourself, they were traveling down there, and they didn't know anybody, maybe except for Charles, and maybe some people didn't even know him. Is there a expat community in Brazil? And if so, your suggestions on how they can get in touch with that expat community or a person like yourself, because you're living down there anyway.
Well, for people of color coming to Brazil, for many years I have been the contact for many of the brothers coming down, whether doctors, lawyers, or whatever, politicians. All have been all my friends, so many friends over the years. I lost a lot of them. Many of them are doctors and everything. We had a sort of a little group we called ourselves the Carioca Brothers years ago. We started about 20 or 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the way we communicate with each other. We would meet sometime in some of the various cities and have a little reunion. But that was that was an expat we had at that time. You know, we just named it the Carioca Brothers, started by along with myself and the late Dr. Robert Beals, died doctor in New York, in Washington, and many others. So that's where it was going. I was one of the main contact once they arrived in Rio.
Okay. Because I heard, Charles always, the accommodations and all that, he mentioned your name. Speaking of which, now you've been down here for a while and you just had a birthday. And one of the things that Charles never brought up on his podcast was health. Okay. And after he passed, I understand before him there were like maybe three other brothers who had, I think Lyle's, I forgot that Lyle's his first name, but any advice on fitness before you book that ticket and then things that a person should do, particularly if they've led a sedentary life and now they come to Brazil and then they're trying to do 100 years, maybe not 100 years, but trying to do 5 years of living in a couple of weeks. I mean, just going from zero to, you're not chasing women back here in the States, but you chase them hard down there. You're not drinking or not drinking that much in the States or wherever you come from, but you're drinking like a fish down there. Any advice? And then, of course, sex, which is exercise. You know, you got little or no sex life here, but then, you're trying to screw everything that's walks. So any advice on fitness? Because, like I said, Charles never talked about that. And, if your health is your wealth. If you ain't got that, you ain't got nothing.
A lot of the guys who come down here now do join the gym, and Brazil, Rio is a place of, you see, jogging along the beach. They're very into exercise and what have you. So the culture itself is about staying fit. So I think, as a matter of fact, I think a lot of the guys who came down, they told me, John, when we down here, they lose weight when they're here.
Right.
Because we all go to gym down here a lot. We all walk the beach. There's a lot of walking by, walking a lot and what have you. But I found over the years a lot of guys that start jogging when they come down here. I didn't find them, the sex is one thing, but I think a lot of them think about their diet and everything, and at least for the last 10 years, and many of them are into exercise when they're here.
Well, that's good. I'm trying to promote fit, be kind of fit when you at least book the ticket, and then when you reach, Brazil or any place, actually, just don't overexert yourself.
Of course.
Because a lot of people, like say, they go from zero or they attempt to go from zero to 100 in, a couple of weeks. And most of them might get away with it, but, when the body says stop, it says stop.
think most of them watch their weight more down here than they do in the United States. I think they eat more in the United States than they do in Brazil.
Right.
And because when they look, when you look around and see everything here is about the on the beach, they're exercising, staying fit, and what have you. So I think they change. From my experience, they change their lifestyle.
That's good. Yeah, because instead of driving around in a car, walking's a good low impact form of exercise, so to speak. Now, activities. It's March right now, middle of March 2020. What kind of events do you have planned for this year as far as things that people might want to fly down for?
Well, right now I'm planning for November. November is referred to as Black Conscious Month. And the holiday is honor Zumbi, if you look at the Brazilian history, gentleman who stood up against the Portuguese monarch and what have you, and he was assassinated November the 20th, 1695. So in November, I plan on honoring some people. One noted is Judge Randolph Jackson, where black people in the Bible, talked to him a couple of days ago, and other people that have contributed something to the black movement, to black history in the United States. So that's my plan for November. So this virus thing might put a damp on it, but those were my plans. And
well, we got a little bit of a cushion between now and November. So hopefully things will get back to normal by then.
Hopefully, yes.
Now, for people that are interested in that, and they want to contact you, how can people reach you if they're interested in traveling to Brazil when everything clears up?
Well, they can reach me via email, my WhatsApp number, and my business number here in Rio de Janeiro also.
So, and that is, you can announce.
Okay, well, my business number is 646-485-6055. My WhatsApp is +55219997184 79.
Okay.
That's the best way to reach me.
All right. Next thing
my
is
email.
Email. Your email address.
My email address is Brazil BRAZIL Games GAMES the numerical 1 at gmail.com. Brazil Games 1 at gmail.com.
All right. Now, I just got a text on my phone from the local newspaper down here. Coronavirus in Florida, that's where I'm at. Disney to close hotels and all retail stores due to COVID-19. Have they closed anything down in Brazil yet, to your knowledge, due to this virus?
To my knowledge, in Rio de Janeiro, not yet. Not in Rio de Janeiro.
Okay.
And as far as I know, none of the other cities, to my knowledge, right now.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good thing. It's trying to see on top of that. Now, the national language in Brazil is Portuguese. And Charles was, working on his language skills. Should a person, any suggestions on how a person should start picking up some of the language before they book that ticket to travel down there? And are there many people speaking English down there? And we're talking about native Brazilians.
Well, not that many speak English, but in Rio de Janeiro, several speak English. Portuguese, I would say, to get some of the books like The Living Language, certain books in Portuguese, to get the tapes too. Right now, there's scores of information relating to Portuguese, and you can study online, whatever. I attended a couple of classes over the years in Manhattan, Portuguese classes, and most of them I dropped out because when the carnival came around, I 35 consecutive carnivals. I never missed carnivals. So that had an impact on my Portuguese classes. And just meeting people online in Brazil, people online and trying to communicate with them. And in many ways, it's just started studying Portuguese.
That's true, because you have, well, you're right, there's a lot of free resources. There's YouTube, there's online language forums, Rosetta Stone, and on and on and on. Matter of fact, I know some people that used to be on Charles' show, they became fluent. You know, basically, really just, like you're saying, they just got immersed in the culture. I mean, they really got into it. And that's how overall, once again, ballpark, what kind of a budget should a person have for, like, I'm going to say, a 2-week, 30-day visit? Let's say 30-day visit, because you really can't do much in a week or 2 weeks. And 30 days isn't a whole lot, but, you know, I had a friend of mine, he visited Brazil, but he was only there a week. And he likes to, he can only do so much in a week. So let's put that out to 30 days. That way you can probably get a teeny bit of traction of what might be going on down there.
Right. Well, if I say a 30-day budget, you look at your airfare. Like I said, about maybe, you know, say $1,300 or more. And you look at your spending per day in meals, about $30 to $40, because the restaurants are very reasonable down there. Since the dollar is over 4-something to 1, you know, you cut down a lot of your expenses. And your entertainment here, you know, it depends on what your lifestyle is, but, you know, you shouldn't go with more than maybe 50, 60, 70 a day, what have you. So it's not that much. So first have the budget themselves, you know.
Right. Now, occasionally Charles will talk about the favelas. What are, for those who don't know but have heard the name or the term, what are the favelas?
Favelas are slums, basic slums here in Rio de Janeiro, and it started many, many years ago in the colonial time. It's were made up of runaway slaves and slave free men, what have you. And it started in the favelas here many, many years ago, especially in Rio de Janeiro. You had at one point you had an economy was growing. You needed workers here in Rio de Janeiro, so people would come from other parts of Brazil to Rio to work. And what they found out here in Copacabana, some in the low-lying areas here, that they couldn't live here because it was so expensive. So they became squatters on the mountainsides and in the suburbs, and that's where how your favelas grew. Other events happened. They had a war called the Canudos War, and after the Canudos War was over with, Canudos was a group of people who resented the Portuguese rule, and they had their own little religion and what have you, and the monarch tolerated them, but after they had the new regime, when the monarch left, they went after Canudos, and yeah, I think you had 30,000 soldiers after the war. They came to Rio, and they couldn't live in the low area here, so they went to the mountains and joined the squatters and the favelas, the slums there, and that's how it grew, and that's how that blend, a lot of mixture between Caucasian-looking blacks and the Indians. So that's how your favelas grew in Rio de Janeiro.
Okay.
All parts of Brazil.
Rio de Janeiro versus São Paulo. Because São Paulo was huge in population. What are some of the interesting distinctions between the two, those two cities?
São Paulo interests me. Ex-mayor was a friend of mine, the late Celso Peter. São Paulo is huge, like New York, you know. And I would say a lot of poverty in São Paulo. And I used to go to Sao Paulo a lot. They have a black university in Sao Paulo. Zumi dos Palmares, Dr. Jorge Vicente, a friend of mine, is the president. So I used to visit Sao Paulo every November for the Zumbi celebration.
Mm-hmm.
Sao Paulo is an interesting city. It's very diverse, but it's just too much traffic for me, too much movement. I prefer Rio instead.
And Rio has the beach as well.
Rio has the beach.
Right.
Sao Paulo has a beach too, but there's nothing. It's at Santos, which nothing could compare to Rio de Janeiro.
Okay.
And Salvador Bahia.
Charles used to talk about that place too. If anybody has any questions of Mr. John Thompson, 619-768-2945, then just press 1. I'll see your hand, and I'll patch you into the conversation. We got people listening. But like I said, if you got any questions, just call that number and then press 1, and we'll patch you into the conversation. Your backstory, how did Brazil get on your radar, and, you know, what motivated you to take your very first trip to Brazil?
If I could take some questions, if you ask. Well, I started visiting the Caribbean, Jamaica, mainly Jamaica, Montego Bay, hanging out at the club in Montego Bay. And it was the difference between, I look at the Caribbean and Brazil, is that when I was visiting the Caribbean, when you get off, say you get off the plane, what have you, going through customs, I didn't find that with blacks to put ribbons around the neck. But then they weren't too reluctant to give it to blacks at that time. This was during the Bob Marley, before Bob Marley was killed. He was, assassinated. I used to visit Montego all the time and Barbados and what have you. So, but I found that in Brazil, regardless what your color was, race, they were very warm, and I found more warmth in Brazil than I did in the Caribbean and everything, and that just, Brazil was it, man. I just found the love in Brazil. My best friends here, inspectors, and they're white, and lawyers, but it treated much different, and I love that, and that's probably what kept me coming back and forth to Brazil, is the love they've shown to me in Brazil.
Oh, speaking with, because, with a lot of YouTube videos, one of the things that comes up a lot is race relations in Brazil. I haven't been there, but I've always heard good reports. What's your take on it?
Blacks in Brazil, it's in many ways, it's similar worldwide. Blacks are still at the economically the lowest level of totem pole in the year. I'm glad you mentioned that because years ago I marched with Al Sharpton. I remember the day of outrage over the Brooklyn Bridge. And then I would march with the Brazilian movement here in Rio for Black Holiday. So eventually we got the Black Holiday, okay? And the ex-governor of Rio, Benedito da Silva, a very good friend of mine, leaders of the Black movement here, even though Santos, the common labor religion, and many others I met over the years. So Brazil is a little different. There's racism here, but a lot of it has to do with economics and education. And that's what the Black movement here is fighting for, to make a change, especially the Black women in Brazil. They're getting very powerful in their movement. And we have a town here called Madureira, where you have a strong Black community there. They're working together and everything. So that's a movement. They're inspired by the United States, and there's a lot of movement going on towards getting more racial equality here in Brazil.
Now, you brought up something very interesting. All right. Charles did a video. It's still up on YouTube, where he was having a conversation on the beach with this African-American woman, and he was explaining to her why, because a lot of followers of the Charles Tyler Show, at least the males, because he had females that listened too, were sick and tired of American women. But you do have a lot of American black women who are in Brazil. So what's the deal with that? Are the American African-American women down there dating the local men? Because, like I say, and you're aware of the groups just like I am, Black Man's Option, one, there's at least two, maybe three Black Man Options groups, which all spun off from Charles. You got groups that, you know, they go to Asia, Philippines, Thailand, Europe, Ukraine. They want nothing to do, and I'll just bring this back to Brazil. I haven't heard of not one African-American man who's gone to Brazil who, unless it's his wife or something that he bought with him. Now, I haven't heard that yet, but I'm sure you got situations like that. Like you said, you do have African-American women that are in Brazil, living in Brazil, but who are they married to or dating or boyfriend, girlfriend, that type? Because I know the men, hands down, are dating the locals.
Well, that's a very good subject and you brought up. It reminded me when Essence did the article blaming on Rio. As a matter of fact,
oh, yeah, you're right. That's a very good article.
Well, Susan Taylor, with the governor's office called me and said that no one had a video camera. So they called me and said, John, the vice governor wants you to film a meeting with Susan Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
So I got up early that morning at one-way traffic. I go all the way to Baja and come back. And Susan Taylor met with Benedita, the ex-governor. So I filmed it and blah, 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 blah. As a matter of fact, we were working together and calling each other. And I gave Essence a list of the black male contacts I had here in Rio de Janeiro, because I was the main one to start a mailing list in Rio around 1987, 88, and 89, something like that. And but my thing was, I was a promoter in New York for about 45 years, too. Gave a lot of parties. I mean, Salt and Pepper was at one of my boat rides, da, da, da. I found the black women's at one point, to me, they were just as beautiful as Brazil was, man. And I love my black women. I had no problem with them, see.
Okay.
This generation change came way after I arrived in Brazil, of they feeling about the black women. That wasn't no issue with me whatsoever, and it had never been an issue with me. That's one way I sort of differ from the Charles Tyler and our philosophy and everything. Because, to me, the black women is the backbone of many things. So I'm not one who run away from black women in the United States. I got good friends in the United States, been loyal friends for many years. I had a mailing list in the United States, about 3,000 to 5,000 people. So my problem, I didn't have that problem. The young people after me had that problem, but whatever they call it, a problem. And I expressed that in the frustrated video that Al Greaves made. I was frustrated, and I spoke about that. If you look at frustrated, you see what I had to say about that whole issue.
Okay, that video is or documentary. Yeah, that I need to go back. I haven't watched it in a while, but it's got like way over a million views on that. But yeah, some people embrace it. And but some of the response videos, which were coming from women, American women, were not too high on some of the content. We got a caller here at 314. Your mic is open.
Hey, LA, and your guest. How you doing?
Fine. Got a question for Mr. Thompson?
No, I was... These black women in the United States are not what they were decades ago. My second wife is from Ghana, and I see the difference in the two. And we have to admit that it exists. Not only does it exist in the female, but it also exists in the males, because look at the culture and the family, how they're being raised. These children are being raised in 65-70% single family homes headed by a female. So how would that daughter know what to look for in a husband if she's never seen it played out between a mother and a father? And we know it's something wrong with the way they're raising the males, because they're constantly complaining about men. They complaining about the very thing that they take a major part in creating, and that's the raising of these males that never are turned into men. So yes, there is a difference. I never been to Brazil, and I imagine listening to you, it would be a nice adventure. I just may take that up upon myself. But I like them women over in Africa, especially when you go out in the bush. And I'm sure you know what the bush is. It's a whole different mentality. But good conversation you have today, L.A.
No, thanks for calling in and commenting. Well, you know, I guess you're right. There's a generational change. Because Mr. Thompson got there 30-something years ago. But there was no YouTube, no Twitter, no World Star Hip Hop. And like I say, I guess that's the difference.
I would like to comment on that. That's he brought up a very good subject there. Now, if you look at history, in 1964, you had a study done on the same subject he's talking about. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time in 64, I think it was this New York senator, I can't think of the name right now, he posed that question to many people, and there were many contributors to that his concept. Why at that point that the black family have not reached the same level as whites in America, okay? And that was the topic. But even at that time, if you remember, even from slavery to now, the black female has always generally have been the head of household. Black male was killed, slaves are hanged, blah, blah, blah. You had the Ku Klux Klan raids on the South. So you always had the black women were most of the time left alone to solve the problems in the household. And the same thing in the 60s. I'm 78 years old, and I remember. I got a book here, The American Poet, by Robert Lipson and Dr. Many, many books dealing with this subject. Dr. Robinson, The Journey of the Songhai People, Dr. Chancellor Williams, The Structure of Black Civilization, Francis Fanon, Black Skin, White Mask. So the women have always been basically the head of household majority in America, based on all these different things that the trials and tribulation that the black male had to go through. You know, no jobs. I remember when I was out there pounding the street for a job, and even when I got my degrees, I still had a problem finding a job. So, and many black males succumbed to drugs, what have you. Remember the time they flood our neighborhoods with crack and everything. You remember the Godfather, what they say, give it to the niggas in Harlem, they lost their souls anyway. So there's a lot of reason why the black male have been the only one in the house, in that house to control the black male and what have you. It just didn't happen overnight. This is part of the history of America.
Well, now the way I look at it, I'm agreeing with what you're saying, but the way I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at a larger landscape here, I'm looking at feminism in Western countries has split up, because If you think they got black groups on Facebook and doing YouTube videos, they're dwarfed by white men doing the same thing. Because I remember I was on a plane, I think I mentioned this a couple of days ago on here. I was in a plane flying, where were we flying? Beijing, China. And sitting right next to me was this guy, white dude from Norway. He had had it with women in Norway. Now, that's literally white there. So I'm looking at, you know, and if you look at some of their forums on, you know, Facebook or listen to some of their videos on YouTube, was this because there's a MGTOW, men going their own way, which means they're basically trying to get away from westernized women. So now you see a lot of because you do a lot of accommodations for people over the years. When they come down there, they come to you. I'm sure you now. So that aspect of it, what it could be German men or men from Switzerland. What's your feedback on why are they coming there?
Well, I don't have many white clients. Most of my clients are Afro-Americans or from, you know, black descendants. So I don't have I was talking to one who's a pilot, in fact, for American Airlines. I just called him yesterday, and I don't really get into that type of conversation. Mine is generally on business level.
Okay.
And I really don't have any conversation on the relationship. I get it from the brothers, but I don't have much of a conversation with white people.
Okay. All right, because I'm looking at this. Brazil is less westernized than here.
Well, you know, if I could say something else, it's funny that you made mention, because I grew up in a neighborhood where everybody was married, except for this one woman named Bernadette. And when the mailman seemingly stayed a little bit longer than he did at the other house, that's when he went by hers. But I grew up in the north. Pardon me? No, we talking about in the 60s. And see, I grew up in the north, and with the same things that people in the south experience, we didn't experience that up there. But you know, I'm down in the south now. I'm here in Louisiana. And these are some of the most politest people I've ever witnessed, blacks and white, especially the blacks. Yes, sir. No, sir. How are you? You can be sitting in a customer waiting area in a shop, and everybody walk in the door, speak to everyone as soon as they step inside. You know, I'm from up around St. Louis. You do that in St. Louis, they'll pull a gun on you.
I was in Baton Rouge a few times.
Hmm. Oh, you know, speaking of which, crime. Is that an issue down there, Mr. Thompson?
Crime is, I wouldn't say such an issue. We were talking about crime the other day, me and some of the brothers here. And like I say, my buddy is a police inspector, Caucasian. We've been friends for 30-some years. And years ago when brothers get in trouble down here, it was him and I. We didn't turn our phone off because we were on a 24-hour call, and we would respond, whatever. I've been to precinct 3 or 4 times. He's been there about 4 or 5 times when he called precinct. You know, brothers do some weird shit, you know. That's just part of life, though. But anyway, crime is here. The problem with crime is a problem in the police department here and many other things. My ex-friend is the commander, George De Silva, writer, lawyer, whatever. And crime is a problem. You have to address, you know, deal with the right way of where you hang out at and da-da-da and what have you. Crime against blacks, the minimum crime is white now. They mostly attack the white for the blacks. It's weird, and that was in that regard. And that's the problem with the politics of Brazil, the politics of the United States. You're not doing anything to schools and to help people in the favela and poor to advance themselves. I have a project right now. I work out with the kids with McDonald's corporations, and we do have a project in the favela for trying to get a school started. It's my project, and McDonald's owners are helping me with it. So it is a problem. There's the same problem in any society when you have when you neglect your poor.
Okay. Well, look, Mr. Thompson, we appreciate it. We're going to, for people listening, now on every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, adjust for your local time zone globally because people listen to this podcast all over, Mr. Thompson will be on Sundays, and he'll be giving you updates on what you need to know about traveling to Brazil and what's happening in Brazil and that type of thing. Mr. Thompson, any closing statements before we go?
Yes, my closing statement is come to Rio, the marvelous city, and enjoy yourself. And don't worry about the crime and everything. We'll make sure you're protected.
Okay, and like I said, Charles Tyler used to just rave about it. On that note, thank you, Mr. Thompson. Thank you, everybody who's listening. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.
Thank you, brother. Bye-bye.